Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Everything Iconic. I'm Danny Pellegrino, and today on the show we have two very special guests. The first guest is Becca Tobin, who you guys might know from Glee or from the Lady Gang podcast. She has a new book out with the other two members of the Lady Gang. It's called Act Like a Lady. I got an advance copy and it's so great. I hope you check it out. Order it on Amazon or wherever you get your books. Support an indie bookseller, possibly. Wherever you get the book, get the book. We talk about all sorts of stuff. We talk about Housewives, Bravo, Summer House, all. We cover it all. We mention it all. And then after my chat with Becca, I have an interview with a guy named Dan Lanigan, who is one of the creators and stars and hosts of this show on Disney Plus called Prop Culture. Now, it's one of my favorite shows that I've binged this year. I can't recommend it enough. If you have Disney Plus, please check it out. Again, it's called Prop Culture, and it's perfect for people who like behind the scenes of movies stuff. So this guy, Dan Lanigan, he's a prop collector. So throughout his life, he's collected all sorts of amazing props. We actually did the interview via Zoom. So if you want to check it out and watch it, you could see it on the new Everything Iconic YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Danny Pellegrino and the number one. So you can see both of these interviews actually over on the YouTube channel. But it's fun on Dan's interview because you can see some of the props he's collected. There was an Indiana Jones hat from the first Indiana Jones movie. There's all sorts of stuff. So you can check that out and watch it on YouTube and watch his show Prop Culture. If you like movie making, if you like pop culture, I think it's so fantastic. I laughed. I cried. I was invested. I hope that we get a season two of it because it's one of my favorite shows I've seen this year. And Dan is the host and also one of the creators of it. So he's the one that's going around and collecting these props and then also talking to a lot of the amazing craftsmen and craftswomen who have worked on a lot of these movies that we loved. In the show, he covers so many classic movies. He covers The Nightmare Before Christmas, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He covers Tron. There's a lot of great stuff over there. So Disney Plus, Prop Culture. With that, I will leave you guys with both of these interviews. I put the timestamp in the episode description if you just want to listen to one or the other. If you want any of the t-shirts or any of the Everything Iconic merch, you can go to everythingiconic.store. Everythingiconic.store. Find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino. Again, subscribe to the YouTube channel. I hope you guys are enjoying those video interviews. I'll try to do more if you guys like them. And you can view them all. I'm trying to get the production level on those Zoom interviews boosted a little bit. So, you know, as we go, they'll get better. But I think they're great now. Anyway, love you all so much for listening. Please enjoy these chats with Becca Tobin and Dan Lanigan.
Hi.
Hi.
Becca Tobin, welcome to Everything Iconic. Becca, how are you doing today?
I'm great. It's early in the morning. I haven't been getting out of my pajamas till about 11 lately, so good.
I see you've been going, I follow you on social media, and I see you've been going on a lot of walks, which is good. You're at least getting out of the house.
I mean, so many walks. I'm about to lose my mind. I'll walk like 6 miles a day. Right. I feel like I'm like retired living in a golf community, but it's good. You know, it's something. How are you?
I'm okay. You know, I've been a little under the weather, but I'm slowly getting better. But yeah, I'm excited. You guys have a new book coming out.
Yeah.
Tell me about Act Like a Lady.
So Act Like a Lady is kind of the antithesis of the title, which is funny. It's a book of advice. And within the book, the three of us, the hosts of the Lady Gang, we each write personal essays that kind of pertain to each lesson or, you know, piece of advice. It's four parts. It's the relationship you have with yourself, dating, friends, and career. So
you guys have been doing Lady Gang since 2015, right?
Yes. Can you believe it?
I mean, that's insane. That's insane. Have you guys gotten in any like big fights over the years?
You know what's funny is that I was on Heather Dubrow's podcast yesterday and she asked me the same question. And for 24 hours now, I've been racking my brain for like an actual fight. But no, I mean, we have disagreements, but it never gets to like an emotional level, which right. is incredible because I'm an actress, so I have many emotions. But I think that being paired with two such like cool, calm, collected partners has helped me a lot. Like three Beccas in the group would have been Real Housewives status. But since they're so great, it's amazing and so easy.
Did you guys know each other before all this?
So Kelty and I knew each other from like a past life when we were dancers in New York. She was a Rockette and I was on Broadway and we would kind of bump into each other at auditions and we'd be like competing for jobs against each other. So we knew each other like acquaintance, maybe even less. And then Jack and Kelty, they actually share a mutual ex-boyfriend and that's right. how they know each other. But I didn't know Jack until our first day where we pitched this podcast. Like I met her on that day. Yeah.
Have you guys had any controversies with the podcast? I mean, have you, I'm sure over the years you guys have said things because I talk like sometimes 3 hours a week and I'm like, you know, sometimes you just say things. Like, is there something that sticks out in your mind?
For sure. Yeah. I made a really bad joke a couple years ago and it was like, I won't even repeat it because it's like even justifying it, I'd get in trouble, that sort of a thing. Right. It was a joke and we had a lot of girls reach out, very upset with me. And we also had some girls reach out to the brands that sponsor the Lady Gang podcast to tell them to stop doing that. They didn't, thank God. But what's so funny is that joke that I made was years ago. And since then, I've listened to one really popular podcast hosted by a man, a straight man in Hollywood. And he actually uses my same joke regularly.
Oh my God, who is it?
I can't say.
It's probably Dax Shepard. Is it Dax Shepard?
I don't know.
I feel like it is. I feel like it is.
It might be. It might be. But, you know, it just like speaks volumes about, you know, where we're at, you know, right. what people can get away with.
I was reading the book last night and you describe yourself as the cynical one.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to know, I wanted to do sort of like the opposite of that. And I just want to know some of the things you like unabashedly.
Oh my gosh.
Like within pop culture. So like, first of all, in terms of when you were a teen, mm-hmm. what kind of music did you like? Like what bad pop music or, you know, good pop music did you like?
I was like a walking stereotype. I loved Britney Spears. I loved Christina Aguilera. I loved NSYNC. I loved Backstreet Boys. Like I loved the mainstream pop culture. I also had like a weird like emo edgy side that would like sing Jewel in my shower to myself and like cry. But mostly I was pretty mainstream. And I still really do unabashedly love like Britney Spears and that whole like age of pop music. But I would say that like Real Housewives now is the thing that I wholeheartedly love so much and it brings me so much joy.
I want to talk about this. So you watch all the franchises? Do you watch some of them?
I try really hard to get it all in, but like who has the time for that? I mean, what am I talking about? I certainly do. But I also
have the time, Becca.
It's true, but I have to walk 6 miles a day. So it's like, you got to get it in. I love New York so, so much.
So funny.
And they are not disappointing right now.
No.
Holy shit.
I saw some people complaining about it online and I'm like, what more can they give us? Like they're so fun.
It's like Sonia Morgan full tilt. Like right. there's nothing better. I love Beverly Hills. I love Orange County. I love Atlanta. I think that's it. I can't get back into Jersey. I was into it in the beginning, but like, yeah, no, that's about it.
I love when a housewife watcher says, that's it. Like you just named four series and you're like, that's it. Like,
like that's 4 hours of TV in a week. That's it.
Right.
Yeah. It's
have
fine.
You been watching the Atlanta Zoom reunion?
No, but I have it recorded, but I heard about the comment made about social distancing, her breasts social distancing.
Becca, so good.
It's like the comment of quarantine.
It's shocking. Like I had very low expectations. I thought, you know, I was just happy they were doing it. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out to be so amazing. So amazing.
I got to watch
okay,
that.
Okay. So back to your cynical side. I also want to know like your favorite movies. Like what kind of stuff do you like?
Okay. My favorite movies. I love like a really great rom-com. One of my favorites is, oh, a really under the radar one. Failure to Launch was on recently.
Stop it. That's unacceptable.
I know.
There's so much animal work in that movie. Don't you think there's like a yes. animal?
Well, the theme is the animals are acting out against him because the universe needs him to get his life right. But like it's Bradley Cooper pre-Hangover. Like it's just, there's so much richness in there. And I love Sarah Jessica Parker. What else is some other really great
ones? Did you ever see that one where it was like, did you hear about the Morgans where it's her and I want to say Hugh Grant and they have to go into hiding or something. It's very, but Sarah Jessica got like the tail end of the stick. Or
she got like what Reese turned down right. in the 2000s, you know?
Yeah. Like they went to Katherine Heigl, then they went to Reese and then they went to Sarah Jessica.
It's so true. It's so true. I just love a rom-com. Like I'll never turn that off. And then I also, Bridesmaids is a movie that no matter what, without a doubt, I will cry laughing at certain scenes over and over again. And like anything Melissa McCarthy, like I know that they aren't critically acclaimed films like Spy, but
Spy is good.
Identity yeah. Theft, also very strong. And I love any Melissa McCarthy movie.
Right. Even the one where she's like a Girl Scout. I mean, they're all funny in their own way, but yes. also some of them are pretty bad and like, in a fun way.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys, the Lady Gang, you guys have done touring, you did a TV show, you've done a book now. What else is on the list? What else do you guys want to do?
Well, we have a clothing line coming out, a collection with Express in July.
Did you guys think, like, when you started this, did you even imagine all of this stuff happening?
No, but this is like how my life goes. You know, it's like you want something like as an actress, I'm like, oh, so planning ahead for the next 5 years, like when Glee ended, I was like, okay, so I'm going to manifest like another scripted TV show. And the universe was like, nah, bitch, you're going to do a podcast and an unscripted show and all this other random things that like you've never even thought of, which I love. I think it's been the greatest blessing because it's also made it fun because I don't have expectations for where this brand is going. We just sort of like the door opens and we walk through it, which is such a lovely way to live after being an actress and like forcing down doors just to be seen and liked and approved. Like it's so lovely. Like I don't know who to thank for it, but it's great. Probably Kelty. She's like the brains behind this entire operation.
Well, I was going to say, there's something so powerful about being in control of your own career. And I think like being an actress, you just don't have the control because, you know, scripts are so reliant on looking for a specific person. And then there's so many politics involved. So I think it's amazing that that you guys have been able to grow so much. It's inspiring, I think.
Thank you.
Tell me about why should people pick up the book? I was reading and I loved it last night, so I think everyone should pick it up. And it's not just for women either. I think it's great for gay men too.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say probably not straight men because there's things in there that are like so shockingly disgusting, like the story about when Kelty left a tampon in for days on end. Gross.
Straight men listening to my podcast, Becca. That's not happening.
You know what? I don't know. I think you're a universal taste. Well, yeah, I think that it's, to pick it up, you know, what's funny is there's everything in it from girls in college that are kind of figuring out like navigating who to date, what to do about fuckboys, and how to handle toxic friendships. So there's stuff like that was advice that we wish we had had in our early 20s or just 20s in general. And then there's stuff for like old married ladies like myself who just want to laugh at the personal essays about like, you know, well, actually, Kelty has a really great essay about her first divorce or her divorce, not first, hopefully only.
Yeah.
So there's like still a lot of heart in it too. So if women are going through a divorce, it's like, we're like, the stigma is such bullshit. And she kind of tells the story and it's just telling stories to make women feel less alone, whatever they're going through. So it's sort of for everyone, except for my parents.
But was there stuff in there? Because there is a lot in there that definitely like, you know, crosses a line in certain ways and not in a bad way. It's just, there's a lot of things that are in there that are very personal. I wondered if there was anything you were too afraid to put in there. I mean, it seems like it kind of goes there.
Yeah, there was, we decided that since we have this podcast and we've had it for 5 years almost, we were like, we have to tell stories that these girls haven't heard before, which sometimes means getting a little more vulnerable because you like to keep it light on the podcast. You know, it's, she may have mentioned her divorce flippantly in the past, but she's never really gone there as far as like, you know, there's a lot of pain and sadness. And so we kind of took those stories and just went a little deeper so that we weren't a total buzzkill on the podcast. The hardest things for me to write about were any of my like sexual trysts before Zach, because I talk about him sometimes on the podcast, but I don't get specific. And it also with a podcast, like you probably feel the same way. Yeah, you do it, you record it, it kind of lives forever, but like who goes back and listens to those podcasts? Right. Not my in-laws, you know? Yeah. But they are going to pick this book up. So those were the things, like I had a relationship with a sex addict and I go into major detail about our experience and like my butthole clenches every time I think of anyone I know reading it.
What did you learn from that relationship with the sex addict?
What I learned was what I like in the bedroom. So it was sort of my test driving of sexual partners so that I could land on what ultimately ended up being my perfect flavor, if you will, my husband. But you know, I felt like I needed to really try it out. And I tell girls out there, like, you probably should, if don't be afraid to add notches on the old belt, if you're careful and responsible. I think it's important to try out different sexual partners.
And it's important to be sex positive too, I think, in general. Yeah. Oftentimes that could be such a taboo topic. Mm-hmm. What about the other girls? I know they're not as, and I don't want to say as open, but mm-hmm. they're not as forthcoming. Yeah. Was it hard for them to kind of go there with certain essays?
Yeah, they're not as vulgar. No, I think that I love Jack's parts of the book because she gets really open about like body image stuff and how she's sort of tortured herself over the years. And if you looked at Jack, she's like got the body of a supermodel. She's right, the ultimate cool girl. She's stunning. And so I think that her honesty, and it doesn't come across as that like gross Hollywood type of like body positivity stuff. It's just genuine. Like we're all the same. Every woman has moments where we hate ourselves and man, like, right. And it's okay. And she kind of goes through her journey of that. And so she brings a lot of that kind of heart to the book. And then, you know, Kelty is just so, she's a special snowflake. And so
she's so funny. I was loving her parts of the book last night. So, I mean, I loved all of it, but yeah, I was loving her parts of the book. It was just so her.
It's so in the her. Best way. Yeah. And she's kept a journal her whole life. And when you read excerpts from this journal, it's our book. You know what I mean? It's so uncensored, and she so sometimes lacks self-awareness in a beautiful, like adorable way. And so she does a lot of that in the book.
Speaking of journals, I know we were texting about this or DMing about Jessica Simpson's book.
Oh my God.
Please tell me what you thought.
Holy shit. First of all,
when I went to your podcast, I told you how good it was, and I could tell you were like, I don't believe him.
No, you actually turned me on. I was like, you know what? Kelty said it was great, but she says everything's great. But when you said it was great, I was like, okay. And I knew you were a true fan. So she's the reason that I started these 6 mile walks because I just didn't want the audiobook to end. Holy shit. I did not know that she went there in all aspects of her life. Her dad, her career, Nick, her drinking. Like it was bonkers.
John Mayer. All of it was insane. And I couldn't believe that. I mean, I'm sure you know from writing the book that usually the publishers can get weary about publishing certain specific names or things like that. And I was shocked that she did.
Same. And I also wonder like what the status is with John Mayer. Like, has he refuted these statements? Like, has he, but I guess not, but he was completely emotionally not abusive, but like manipulative. And and he reminds me of so many guys, like just so many guys. It's so
especially
gross.
Here in LA, like it was such like a Hollywood LA straight guy kind of vibe.
Completely. And like he needed to be a tortured soul. So he had to like, the push and the pull. But then I went on from Jessica Simpson to the Demi Moore audiobook.
I love the Demi Moore book. Did you like it?
Incredible. The two of those books, like I went on to listen to others and I just don't care about anybody else. Those two are the best memoirs I've read as far as Hollywood women go.
Yeah. You know, the Demi Moore book, I agree. I thought it was just so amazing. And I had no idea about some of her past and her history as a young woman. I thought her book was just phenomenal.
It was amazing.
I felt like her book didn't really get a lot of like,
acclaim.
Attention. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't either. And also when people talked about it, they were like, yeah, it's good. I mean, she could have gone farther. I'm like, I don't know if she could have.
No, Have you been following like her quarantining with Bruce and the kids?
Yeah, now I'm completely obsessed with her.
It's like so wild.
It's like so wild.
I don't understand it.
I don't get it. And I want to go to their compound in Idaho though.
Bruce's wife or whatever, like, isn't around. I mean, it's like weird. I don't get it.
I want them to get back together after hearing that audiobook. I want them back.
Now you've done a lot of Hallmark movies. Do we have any Hallmark movies coming up? Because you know I love a Hallmark.
I know you do. No, I don't think so, because right now everything's shut down. I've heard rumors that there may be some filming happening soon in Canada, which is where I've shot two out of the three movies that I've done. Yeah, I don't know. I love doing it. I do, like, for the last 3 years, I do about one a year. It takes 3 weeks and it's like going to summer camp. It's so fun.
And do you notice like the Hallmark fans are weird like myself? Like we all love the Hallmark movies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. A weird group.
But I get it. I totally get it. And now if I wasn't in them, I think that I would right now be watching them all the time. Cause it's such a like lovely, happy, optimistic, you know, vibe.
Yeah. It was interesting at the beginning of quarantine how they just started playing the Christmas movies over and over again. I think they're still doing it on the weekends. And it's like such a weird thing, but it's like we need that sort of weird comfort right now.
I know. I mean, they already before quarantine did Christmas in July, that whole thing, remember?
Yeah.
So they love. Yeah.
You know, I mostly like the holiday ones. Like those are the ones. And I keep saying we need gay people on them. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
but you know, the whole controversy with like, the ad that was pulled.
I know that really turned me off last year.
Same, but then they actually put it back on and did a little house cleaning within the organization. So, you know, hopefully we're moving in that direction. It would be amazing.
I hope so, because I love those movies and, you know, I want more. Okay, Glee, are you noticing people are like watching Glee in quarantine? Is that a thing?
So much. I get so many messages now. Just, it's so funny because it feels like a lifetime ago already. And people screenshot pictures like of their TVs and I barely recognize myself. It's shocking.
I mean, it's truly shocking. Like I always see a lot of people on Twitter will post like clips from especially the later seasons. And it's like, how did this happen? Like,
how? I mean,
how did this happen?
I stopped watching after, so I didn't watch before joining the show. And then I watched a little bit my first season, but then after that, I kind of stopped watching completely. So I have a really good friend, Jamie Lynn Sigler, who was on Sopranos, and she did the same thing. She said she never really watched it. She kind of couldn't. She was too close to it at the time, but during quarantine, she's gone back and rewatched it. And so I think in a couple years I could do the same. She says she loves it now because she's watching it
detached.
As a viewer. Yeah. So I hope I can do that with Glee one day.
When you guys would get the scripts, were there any times where you're like, what the fuck is going on here? Like,
I mean, like weekly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, I sort of,
by the way, I say this with love because you know, I've watched every episode.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah. And I think that like, that was sometimes that was sort of the appeal, like the crazy outrageous. There were moments where it was like, okay, we've jumped the shark like 8,000 times. But I think it was just, I miss it. I miss shooting it. And I wish I had sort of enjoyed the end a little bit more as opposed to like being critical of the scripts.
Yeah.
But we were all just sort of like, what is happening? Writers included, like everybody.
I mean, it's so many fucking episodes a year. It's like, I mean, it's bound to get crazy because there's just so much writing. You have to do an hour a week and you guys were doing like 24 episodes. It's crazy.
Yeah. 22 episodes. Like I don't understand. I can barely write a pilot myself. And I'm like, there's just no way I could, there's just no world in which I could do this ever. So I'd commend them.
Well, Becca, this was so fun catching up. Hopefully when all of this is over, we can see each other in person.
Yes, please.
Tell everyone where they can find you on social media, where they could pick up the book, anything else you want to plug.
So the book comes out June 2nd. We're in pre-order before that, anywhere books are sold. And you can go to theladygang.com because there's a lot of fun giveaways and incentive campaigns that we're doing. So, yeah.
And it's Act Like a Lady. And I know Kelty really wants New York Times. So we got to get that New York Times list.
Oh, my gosh. If she doesn't, we're going to have a problem. So, yes.
And I will say that pre-orders are the best way to get on New York Times. So if anyone is listening, pre-order right now on Amazon. Yes. Don't wait to buy it. It's really funny. It's really great. And I love, it's so inspiring watching the three of you and what you guys have done with Lady Gang podcast and really paved the way for podcasts in so many different ways. And you guys have a network now and all of this wonderful merchandise and TV show and all of that stuff. It's really amazing. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Stay safe. Love you. And hope to see you soon.
Okay. Bye.
This episode of Everything Iconic is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. Now, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but it's definitely allergy season. You all know I've been struggling a little bit. I usually love the springtime, but I struggle with my allergies, which are just not the most fun. But luckily with Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, the only tissues I like to use, I can say, bring on the blooms, and I can face those allergies head on. Now, Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved, so you can attack watery eyes and battle runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. That's why I love these, because they're so incredibly soft and I don't want to touch my nose with something that's not. Now, I am obsessed with Kleenex. I think they are so really just the best to do it. So for this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on. Again, this allergy season, do not pick up something else. Grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Okay, stand by, here we go.
In a movie, every detail, no matter how small, is designed to tell you something. And ever since I was a kid, I've been obsessed with finding out more.
I want to see it first.
Come on! I'm Dan Lanigan, and I spent my entire life collecting artifacts from my favorite films. Now, I'm setting out to learn more about the props from the Disney movies that I love.
Hi, Dan. It's so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Thanks for being interested in talking to me about our show.
Of course. Well, welcome to Everything Iconic. I got to just say, I binged the entire series of Prop Culture last weekend. I was crying. I was laughing. I thought it was like one of my favorite binge shows of the year. I just think it's fantastic.
Wow.
And as someone who's like a pop culture nerd, like I love all of it. It was just so refreshing to see you hosting it, because oftentimes I feel like a show like that would have, a host that was more hosty. And I don't mean that as an insult. I just mean like...
No. Exactly the reason why I hosted this thing.
It was you could see your passion behind it. And that was just so refreshing. So thank you.
Yeah, I felt... absolutely. I felt... I'm personally not somebody who likes to be in front of the camera. I prefer to be behind the camera. But since I come to this space, this hobby, this world of memorabilia, you know, film archive memorabilia, I have a sense of legitimacy. I've been, researching it for years. Seemed like I was the best guy for it.
It made all the difference in the world, in my opinion. So thank you. How did the show come about? How did you get it up and running?
I had been trying to do a show like this for a while, probably 5 or more years, different iterations of it. But I had been producing TV and some reality space and some docu stuff. And I felt like this world of the memorabilia, which I've been involved in for many, many years, there were stories to be told that I think people needed to hear, and people that are, in a lot of ways, the stars. That they're stars of why these films are important and meaningful. I want to shed a little bit of light on them, and also shed a light on this wonderful artwork that's created for these films that, for all intents and purposes, used to be used as disposable art, and now is being treated with more reverence.
I love that. I love the focus on the artist too. I mean, because oftentimes we do see the people in front of the camera, but I really appreciated seeing some of the craftsmen behind the scenes.
Yeah, that was important to me to dig into the show and to talk to some of the people that I knew previously. And then, through the show, I got to meet a lot of people that I've always wanted to talk to. So it was a wonderful experience for myself. I had pitched this show to finish the question from before. I had pitched this show before. Nobody really got it. They wanted to do something a little bit more transactional, auctions, money, value, and I didn't want to do that. So I waited. I took my time. I wanted to do the show that I felt was right for the subject, and Disney eventually, I was very eventually to be able to pitch to them, and they got it right away. And so it was pretty great.
When you thought about the show previously, when you were pitching it, did you expect it to be emotional? Was that something you thought would happen?
Yes, I expected to be emotional, but not to the level that it came out on the show. It's always been my experience that the reason people collect this stuff and people buy replicas and are interested in the artifacts or the iconography of these movies is because they have such an emotional connection to the films. And I've always had an emotional connection to this stuff. And I think that's why a lot of people collect props and costumes. But bringing it to the people that worked on the films, I knew there would be people that didn't care, and I knew there were people that did care, but it really was impressive for me to experience that firsthand, that, you know, it does mean a lot to these people because it is part of their history.
I was so surprised when I would have tears coming down in an episode because I put it on as a fan of pop culture, and then here I was crying about, you know.
I certainly would have never guessed in a million years that a show that I helped create about movie props would make people emotionally cry in a good way. Maybe in a bad way, but not in a good way.
Right.
So it was very, very heartwarming for me to see that people are starting to connect to this stuff the way I do, which means a lot.
Can you talk to me a little bit about your history with collecting? Were you always a collector?
I was always a collector, not a prop collector, but I started collecting when I was a kid. I had action figures and I was obsessed about Star Wars and, you know, Empire Strikes Back figures. And I had some of those early Raiders of the Lost Ark figures. And, you know, I think I was on the early end of the He-Man stuff. And I loved that stuff. But I also read comic books, so I collected those. So I always had this position of, personally, this stuff means a lot to me. So, you know, hoard's the wrong word, but hold on to it. And as I grew older, that I didn't lose that part of myself. It only became stronger. And as I delved in more and more of movies and honestly really seeing the artwork that is made from these films, I think it was one of the first times I went to the Disney MGM Studios early on in its iteration. And I saw the exhibit that they had that was at the end of the backlot tour. And I blew my mind. You know, all of these props that were used in these films, and wow, they look so different in person. And that's how that worked. And that's how that worked. And it really kind of got me going. And then I started just researching and eventually came across some stuff in the really early days of eBay. And next thing you know, I'm obsessed with prop collecting. And here I am doing a TV show.
I love it. And I can see are those props behind you? Are you in your office?
Yeah, I am in my office. These are some of the pieces I have that I display in my working space.
Do you have a favorite piece?
You know, I like to compare having a favorite piece to a family that has a favorite child. You really don't. It's so weird to compare it that way, but it is, you know, there's a lot of pieces I really like and there's a lot of pieces I really love. Some of my favorite pieces are probably connected to movies that are my favorite, like Nightmare Before Christmas. My Jack Skellington puppet means a lot to me. I got to meet Henry Selick by collecting that piece and verifying it. My Indiana Jones hat, which you can see up there from Temple of Doom and the Whip, those pieces mean a lot to me. And the Blade Runner blaster that I have from Blade Runner, that film, that's probably my favorite piece just because I adore that film. And that's such an important part of the character of Deckard.
You mentioned Nightmare Before Christmas, and that movie really has had such an interesting post-theatrical life. I wonder if you could just speak on what you think it is about that movie that it lives on so much.
It's complicated. I think it's a very smart, unique film, especially for its time. It's Disney's first feature-length stop-motion film. Tim Burton really got to play with his visuals of what he loved as a filmmaker and his art design in three dimensions. I mean, Batman is pretty unique as Batman, but
I got Nightmare a Batman Christmas. Shirt on right now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Catwoman. Yeah. But you know, that is a key part of it. The music is just so central to the story. Danny Elfman's style is so strong and you know, permeates that entire film. Henry Selick's stop motion style is so strong in that film. And he's, you know, he did some really cool, crazy stuff back with the MTV days, doing these little commercials for MTV. You know, you've got all these amazing people working on it. Such amazing artists that actually built the stuff for the film. Henry Selick was just spectacular. I mean, there's so many of these amazing things that come together, and it stands the test of time, and it builds and it builds and it builds. And honestly, you know, the characters are all kind of little toys. So they're very iconic. They're very unique. And that's why, you know, the iconography is so strong because of the film, but then it translates into shirts, into toys. June Planning did a whole line of toys that I collected before I collected stop motion puppets. I mean, it's just,
right.
It's everywhere.
Almost like a lot of magical elements just sort of not accidentally, but seem to come together for that movie.
Yeah.
Do you have another favorite stop motion movie? Like, is there another one that you think is kind of up there with Nightmare, or is that just the tippy top?
No, I'm a really big fan of Henry Selick's work, and Coraline, okay. I think, is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And so that one, to me, is right up there with Nightmare. Corpse Bride, I think, is really good. One of the things I don't like about Corpse Bride was it was at the beginning of using a lot of digital technology with stop motion. So they cleaned up a lot of the stop motion flaws, which at the time made me feel like it looked like CGI. I've gone back to it, and I see how that was the right move for the time. But, you know, what's great about stop motion is all the little flaws inherent to the process.
Right.
You know, the odd, weird way that the puppets work, and the hair kind of moves around. And even when you use 3D printing to do the faces, you still have little weird aberrations that add a quality of physicality to it. And stop motion, as great as animation is, and I love animation, traditional and in 3D CGI animation, stop motion, you just can feel the handprints on these pieces and the artists that work through the work.
Yeah. Switching gears a bit, I loved seeing Rick Moranis on the show, and he's sort of a essentially retired. I don't know if he's officially retired, but did you get any sense? Did you get a sense talking to him of why he sort of stepped away from filmmaking?
You know, we didn't really discuss that. You know, the way I look at this show, this isn't heavy journalism. This is discussing things that are important to the framework of the show, which happens to be important to me. But part of the process of the interview is I have conversations with these people. They're not interviews, they're conversations. And just meeting the guy who I've been a huge fan of his work forever. I'm not going to get into, so why'd you retire? And what's the deal with your family and all that kind of stuff? So, he just seemed like it was the right, you know, he just seemed happy with what he was doing, and he made the right move for him and his family.
It was a delight to see him.
It was amazing to see him. We were very surprised that we were able to get him. It was just the right place at the right time, and he seemed to like what we were doing, and it worked for him. And I was very, very proud to be able to sit and talk to him, especially about one of my favorite films, Strange Brew. There's a whole like 10-minute conversation which didn't make it into the cut, where we're talking about his background in SCTV and Strange Brew and how he directed that film. And it was awesome. It was a great experience.
I love that. I'm also just noticing, is that a Coraline above your shoulder there?
It is. That's a Coraline puppet with a full armature, full screen use, the whole works.
Oh my gosh. Do you have pieces all over your house, or do you keep them in one area?
I have a few pieces in the house. My wife would prefer that I keep some of the more delicate pieces in my office or in my display space. But, and I have an eight-month-old child, little boy, and my nine-year-old girl. So it's not the best idea to keep stuff all over the house. But that's why I have, you know, all these wonderful pieces here in my office. I can come in here and work and kind of be inspired by this wonderful artwork.
Do the kids like playing with everything, or do they grab hold of it a lot?
No, my 8-month-year-old, I have to work on. He's obviously 8 months old. But my daughter, as she grew up, she would get exposed to this stuff, but know that she, you know, couldn't touch it. They weren't toys, but we would talk about it and she would understand it. And she's very respectful of the stuff. I didn't keep her away from it, but she knew her limits and it worked.
I love the mix of films in season one. You really seem to run the gamut. There were movies that were kind of made for children as well as some stuff for adults. It was just a beautiful mix. And I wondered what did you want to do for season one that maybe you just didn't get around to that might be for season two?
Really wanted to do Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's an important film to me. And it didn't work out, you know. Raiders and the Star Wars films, at least the older ones, are the treasure of Lucasfilm and the treasure of George Lucas independently. And, you know, we're a new show coming out with a pretty unique format. It was amazing that we can get Disney to allow us the access. Lucasfilm was a little more protective, understandably so. And, you know, they have plans for their own IP. My hope is that season two, if we get a season two, which we haven't gotten yet.
You have to. It's so good. I'll boycott. I'll be so mad.
Just tell Disney that.
Yeah. They have.
But, you know, they think, yeah, I would think so. But who knows? You know, those decisions are made on much broader information and what the company's going. So, you know, I understand whatever they decide to do. But. You know, Lucasfilm, hopefully them and George sees the show. They understand what we're about and maybe they'll let us play in their world a little bit. I mean, Raiders would be amazing. I would love to be able to dig into Raiders, but we'll see.
Two of the movies that you mentioned in an interview recently that you would like to do for season two, I think you mentioned Home Alone and Hocus Pocus, which were two really important movies to my childhood. I wondered if there were specific props from those movies that you kind of have been thinking about that you would like to find or dive more into. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, I think both films are, what they're interesting about them, they're very different types of films. You know, Home Alone is a movie that by all intents and purposes, it's all just regular stuff, right? It's toys, it's bicycle parts, it's sleds. But because of the nature of the film being a physical comedy, there are a lot of specific versions of these things. And those are what, you know, I would like to see if we can track down. You know, the more effects stuff, the rubber versions of weapons, the weird costumes that the headpiece that is worn by Joe Pesci, yeah. when he gets his head burned. I mean, that had to have been a specialty thing made to look like he was burned. You know, those kind of things. Let's see if we can figure out if they still exist and what happened to them. Hocus Pocus. I mean, across the board, there's so much wonderful artwork that's made for that film. Makeups, animatronics, hand props, costumes, some amazing costuming. All that stuff. We just got to see what we can find. And, I would say Hocus Pocus, if we get a season two, I would think, you know, as we go through and figure out these episodes based on what's available and who could we talk to, and, you know, is it good for the company and all those kind of things, Hocus Pocus feels like one of those home runs. Another one that to me feels like a big home run would be The Princess Bride. I would love to do The Princess Bride because it was a Fox film. It's now Disney. It's on the service. And there are just so many great moments in that film, such interesting stuff and interesting people that worked on it. you know, both behind and in front of the camera.
I'm curious about your thoughts on the difference between practical and digital effects. I recently had Alec Gillis on the show, and he's done some great work with the Alien franchise and Santa Claus with Disney. And he was enlightening me a little bit about how now we've moved so far into digital effects, and it seems like a lot of films have strayed away from the practical effects. And I wondered your thoughts and why maybe the industry should get back to practical effects a little bit more.
Digital effects, you can do amazing things with digital effects now. And one of the benefits from a filmmaking perspective of digital effects is you can shoot the movie and save a lot of that work till after the fact. So you don't have to commit to it, which means you can push those decisions back and allow other people to partake in figuring things out that normally wouldn't have the time to. That, to me, feels a little less committed to the project and committed to, not the project, but the process. And outside of the, in my opinion, the real tangible benefits of having physical props, costumes, things like that on set pieces, is that the actors can see it and you have real light bouncing off of it. And the camera seeing exactly what's going to go to the audience. But let's be fair, that can't always have it happen. I mean, even Star Wars, there was so many visual effect shots. But by doing it after the fact, it becomes like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And sometimes the limitations of building practical stuff defines the look, the feel, and the story. And there's a lot to that. Plus, you got great artwork, physical artwork that you can keep after the fact. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons, in my opinion, to do it. But there's some things you just can't do physically. You can't do practically. But now, you know, with The Mandalorian, they're doing the best of both worlds. They're planning this stuff out beforehand. They're using digital backgrounds, but the camera is seeing it. So it's a really interesting time. And they're still using practical things like, you know, Baby Yoda's practical, and they've got the practical costumes and practical local set pieces. It's a great mix. And I love that idea of taking the best of both, mixing together and shooting it in camera.
Do you think if and when there is a season two, would you ever go into TV production as well? Like, would you do an episode perhaps on The Mandalorian or another TV show?
I don't know. I would say never say never. But there's so many great movies, that some of which aren't really known very well. And if we can bring attention to them to a broad audience nowadays, I would love to be able to do that. A TV show is a different animal than a film. A TV show is stretched over much more time, so usually there's more pieces involved. It's a much more commitment to everybody. There's something special about these glimpses into time with these films that, you know, you do one movie and it, you know, everything that's made at that time is a example of what's the techniques are used at that time. And the older the show is, the more likely it fits into our category of when you see a piece that you haven't seen in a long time, the attachment and the emotional connection is much stronger. If we were to do what we did with Mary Poppins with The Mandalorian, it would work because it's way too new. Everybody just got off season two. It just wouldn't work.
Right.
Now, is there another show? I mean, they're doing the Disney Gallery version of that, which is interesting. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't know this, but I would hope that they're going to get into some of the props. I've only seen the first episode right now. But there is opportunity to do stuff with that for TV shows. I think our format, which works for us, do it on a film, bring you back to this time that happened, reintroduce you to a movie, reintroduce you to these amazing artists, and try to see this wonderful art in a way that was done differently than it is done now.
Well, my favorite part about the show is every single episode that I watched in the first season, it made me want to watch the movie immediately right after. So I thought it was just such a well-done show. One last question before I let you go. Is there one piece that you've been after, whether a Disney film or something else, like a piece that you've maybe gotten close to or that you really want for your collection?
You know, I would love to add Deckard's trench coat from Blade Runner to my collection. I have most of the costume already. of one of the costumes, which is the costume he uses when he does the human or replicant test with Sean Young's character. But the trench coat is such a big part of that character. And I only know of one that exists out there, and it's a friend of mine who owns it, and I don't think he'll ever let it go. And I respect that. And, you know, the better half of me says, don't sell it. But of course the other half of me says, please sell it. I want to get it. But there's gotta be other ones out there. I would imagine they didn't all get destroyed, but that's kind of my holy grail of sorts.
Right. Well, Dan, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I love the show so much. I hope everyone tunes into Prop Culture on Disney Plus. It's fantastic. And I will be so, there has to be a season two. I'm not even putting out in the universe. There won't be, because I need it. And I need that Home Alone and Hocus Pocus episode.
All right. We'll do our best.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate your interest.
Thank you. Bye-bye.